Peter Watson is the author of a book called A History of Thought and Invention, From Fire to Freud. Watson uses three big ideas to organize his history of ideas, one of which is the idea of the soul, as he told Steve Paulson.
I mean, I could have said that the greatest idea is God, but I wanted to draw attention to the fact that the soul, the concept of the soul, brought with it a whole technology, prayer, notions of limbo, purgatory, and so forth, that enabled priests and bishops to control their laity. And this was a very interesting phenomenon, accounting for a lot of sort of medieval, pre-modern life. And moreover, the notion arises in the medieval times of what was then called in Latin homo duplex, that human beings are in fact two entities. There's our corporeal body, which we see around us and deal with all through our earthly lives. And then within us, there's the immaterial and immortal soul, which is not only immaterial and immortal, but carries with it the implication that it is in some way better than our mortal soul, and that if we can only get in touch with it, our soul will be ennobled and we'll have a better place in the hereafter. And I was interested in this because it seems to me that this is what has lived on, although we live in a more secular world than was true 100 and 200 years ago. Since the age of Freud, essentially his concept of the unconscious and of the id and ego and so forth is a modern notion of the soul, that within us, I mean, we live in now what's called the therapeutic society, and we argue that if we can get in touch with our inner self or our real feelings, we'll lead a much happier life.
That's a fascinating take on Freud, because, of course, he was an atheist and quite critical of religion, but you're saying, in a sense, he operated within the same paradigm.
Oh, yes, I think very much so. I mean, the philosophy of the unconscious was a German phenomenon from about the 1860s. So it wasn't original to him, but his division of the self into the three, ego, superego, and id, was yet a secular trinity, if you like. And the way they're linked is just as mysterious as the earlier trinity. But yes, it's a parallel notion that if we can get in touch with our real feelings, I mean, we accept, most of us do, I don't, but most of us do, that we have these inner feelings or this alternative self within us. And if we can only get in touch with it, in some way our neuroses will go away, our problems will go away, we'll be much more happy and comfortable with ourselves. And this is essentially a secular notion of the soul.
Now, are you willing to put some value judgments on some of these big ideas? For instance, the soul, can we isolate what has been good about that idea and what perhaps has been damaging?
Well, I think that the damaging thing about the soul is its ambiguity, the fact that, you know, it's very difficult to pin down what it is, and this gave the church immense control over people and also led to the fact that heresies were regarded as bad when there was no way of proving it one way or the other. So that led to a lot of inhumanity and cruelty. I think that, on the other hand, the notion of the soul and what might happen to it in the afterlife did lead many people to behave better, to be more honest, to work harder. The old Protestant notion of the work ethic owes something to that concept, I think.
Uh-huh. Now, another one of your big ideas, one idea that you say has shaped human history, is what you call the experiment, science, mm-hmm. which I suppose very much came up in reaction to religion.
One way in considering the history of ideas is to say there are two kinds of thought. There's looking in, which has given us religion, philosophy, psychology, and there's looking out, which has given us travel, science, business, and so forth, trade. And I am very much a looking out man. And I think that it's this change from looking in to looking out which takes place, by and large, most influentially in Western Europe in the late or high Middle Ages, that has really now shaped the world. I mean, we essentially, the man, Robert Grosseteste in Oxford, who had the idea in the 11th century that in order to find out about phenomenon, we should subject them to systematic testing, that is an experiment. And that has led to, you know, in time, to a very, very powerful way of looking at, studying, exploring, discovering, and controlling our world around us. And obviously the main difference between the modern world and the world that existed before is science as a result of the experiment, which led in time to the Industrial Revolution and the mass society that we have now.
And I suppose if we wanted to try to pinpoint the origins of the scientific revolution, well, we probably would go back to Copernicus, placing the Earth not at the center of the universe, but as one of many planets revolving around the sun. And then Galileo, he came along and corroborated a lot of what Copernicus had found. And that, of course, had profound implications on religion.
Yes. I mean, I think that there are several starting points to the scientific world. I mean, I think you have this period from, let's say, the 11th century up until the Industrial Revolution, when I think science and pseudoscience and science and religion exist side by side. I mean, you're right about Copernicus and Galileo, but even a little later with Newton. Newton, we now know from the recent scholarship, was not just the first of the scientists, if you like, the first of the moderns. He was always the last of the ancients. I mean, he believed in alchemy. He believed that there were clues in the Old Testament to the shape of heaven, and he was trying to find this out. He believed that Moses had discovered his law of gravity all those years before him. So he was, although a hard scientist in one way, rather a mystic in another way. So there was this crossover time.
And that's true with a lot of those early scientists. I mean, those great fathers of the scientific revolution. Copernicus himself was a man of God. I mean, you can go through all of those people, those early
yes.
founders, and they all had tremendous belief in God.
I mean, for me, the most interesting thing, particularly speaking, you know, on an American radio show, is that all the German, French, and British scientists who discovered the great age of the Earth in the late 18th and early 19th century. This is before Darwin came along, okay? Before Darwin, before the first hard thoughts about evolution. The people who discovered that the Earth was not just 10,000 years old, but hundreds of thousands, and then millions, and then billions of years old, were all very, very profoundly religious people. Christians in this case. And so the idea that the Earth is very, very ancient, without which you could not have Darwinism, the idea that the Earth is very, very ancient was not the idea of some secularists. It's the ideas of very, very religious people who decided that the evidence showed that that bit of the Bible could not be true.
So what are the, I mean, given that history and given all the tensions that exist today between science and religion, which we see played out all the time now, what does this suggest about the relationship between science and religion? I mean, does there need to be the tension that is so evident today?
I think there does. I mean, I think there's a deep philosophical divide here, which is curiously modern. I mean, the Italian philosopher Vico was the first person to point this up, which is that on the one hand, we think we know what is going on inside us because it is inside us. We know how we feel about things and so on. We know that the world that we have created, the books, the paintings, is our world. Yet, when you look back, that achievement may be splendid in terms of what you look at and so forth. But the world in which we live is increasingly the world of science, which the Vicoists say, well, you can't know that world as well because it's out there. And yet, that's not true either, is it? Because we can control the world very well through science. And so planes stay in the air. You are talking to me thousands of miles away. The technology works. And so there is, I think, an inherently broken back nature about being modern, which is ultimately irreconcilable until the scientists find out, in scientific terms, what it means to be conscious. And, you know, at the moment, we don't even have a language as to how to talk about this. Some philosophers or scientists, psychologists say, well, there's nothing to explain. It's like parallel processing in computers. And others say, well, that's rubbish. That doesn't really explain anything. But I do think it's a good question that there is this division between us. And I suspect that we'll go on one philosopher put it, shifting uneasily from foot to foot as we consider this problem.
Now, you clearly come out on the side of science in this whole age-old debate between science and religion, and I guess I'm wondering if you think that science has replaced religion as a viable idea in the world today.
Yes and no. I mean, it has replaced it in terms, for me, of the intellectual excitement. I don't think most people think that science is as passionate as people thought that religion was passionate in the past. And it seems to me that we have the following problem, that there is religion, which for someone like me is just old hat. There is science, which I find fascinating, but I can see that it doesn't motivate or move people. And then in the middle, we have the arts, which do move people and for the most part are now, it used to be very religious, the arts, but now it's very secular. But I have a problem with that too, because although the arts move many people, if you and I had been having this conversation just over 100 years ago, then we would have taken it for granted that the arts could tell us the truth as much as the sciences. Now, what happened in the 20th century, in my opinion, is that the authority of the arts collapsed, and we now no longer look to the theatre or the film or the novel or to painting to tell us the truth in any deep or meaningful philosophical way. They entertain us, and that may be enough, but it seems to me that we're living in a world where religion has no meaning, where the arts have no meaning, where science has a lot of meaning, but people are sort of unmoved by it.
Well, let's talk about your third great idea, what you call the West, or you might call it Europe, yes, which is really about a new idea of government.
Yes, I mean, I do mean the West, really, but it so happens that it occurs in Europe. It's just a set of, it's a set of changes that takes place, and it varies from little things like the invention of musical notation, which makes music so much easier to produce and reproduce, to changes in worship, which make people much more individual, to changes in letter writing, which means that people can express their feelings and how they can express their sense of individuality. More, it concerns the invention of the clock, the mechanical clock, which creates the working day as we know it, and from that pushes trade and industry forward. The inventions of the spectacles, which makes reading far more widespread. A whole set of changes takes place in Europe at this period, and life basically stops being medieval and begins to be modern as we understand it in any kind of recognizable way. And it seems to me that we now think that we are living in interesting times, but that would probably have been a very interesting time. I mean, one Oxford historian, for instance, said the most interesting time to have lived in were 1050 to 1250, when the changes that I've just been describing were taking place, and 1750 to 1950, when you have all the great changes of the Industrial Revolution, modernism, particle physics, the expanding universe, and so forth, and that these changes, the car, the aeroplane, television in that latter period, these changes are much greater in terms of psychology and sheer change than anything that's happening now.
Peter Watson is the author of A History of Thought and Invention, From Fire to Freud. He talked with Steve Paulson.